So welcome to another episode of Business and Stuff. We've got a fantastic guest today, Phil Fraser. Phil's got a really interesting story and lots of advice for all your listeners today. So I'd say a really interesting thing about Phil is he took a zero investment kitchen table startup all the way to a multi-million pound acquisition to a big PLC around 18 years ago. Phil, you're a business and a coach, but this is a really interesting part of your story. Tell us a little bit about that story and how the acquisition happened.
Yeah, sure. Hi. Good afternoon, Pierre. Just to correct you there, it wasn't 18 years ago. It took 18 years.
Oh, right. Oh, well, okay. Fantastic. That's, mergers and acquisitions can take time. Apologies
okay,
about that.
So let me give you the simple explanation, and then we can dig into it and cover whichever areas you want. So, go back to 2000. I worked at William Hill, the bookmakers. I was recruited to launch their first ever online casino. That was back in 2000. While I was there, we came across online bingo as a product, which was only happening in the US at the time. I left William Hill at the end of 2000, started doing some consultancy work in online gaming, and then thought, hang on a minute, this online bingo thing, there might be something in it. So I dusted off the report that I'd done to the board at William Hill, tidied it up a little bit, and basically took it out to the market to try and get funding, sort of Dragon's Den style, to get some angel investment, which I totally failed at. However, what I'd done is I'd built a very, very basic website which listed the US sites that were in the market at the time. And I'd put a very simple pop-up on it to get some demographics to use as part of my presentation when I was taking it out to the market. What happened was a number of the US sites that were listed on that website contacted me and said, can we advertise on your website? So I said, yeah, sure, yeah. Send me some money and I'll put some ads on the website. And in very, very simple terms, that was how the business started. A total accident. I didn't set out to be a business owner, although I think looking back, there were a lot of things in me that allowed me to become that. I carried on doing a bit of consultancy work while this sort of startup was happening. So, and then got to the point where the balance had tipped that actually I thought, hang on a minute, I can do more work on this website and less, if not none, of the consultancy work. And, you know, we'll give it a go. My wife and I will give it a go. And even when it first started, I wasn't convinced by it. And I was still on the market looking for a proper job. And I actually got offered a very good job at a digital agency. Account director, car, salary, all that usual sort of stuff. And I walked in to them on the Friday before the Monday I was due to start and said, I'm sorry, I can't take this role. I've got this thing that might happen. And that was a real sliding doors moment. And it went from there. As the business grew, we took on a couple of freelancers. 5 years in, so it was all quite sort of slow boil stuff. 5 years in, one of our freelancers said, right, I'm getting a full-time job, which then became a sort of stick or twist point. What do we do from here? So we actually got I think it was our bank, were offering sort of free sort of business advisor advice and sort of showed the business to him and said, what do you think? And he said, go for it, you know, get some staff and get an office. And at the time that was really, really scary. It was a big step. Yeah, long story short, from there we built and we had ups and downs and all that sort of thing, to the point where back in 2018 we were approached by one of the aggregators in the business who sort of said, yeah, here's a pile of money. And I said, fine, here's the keys to the website. And that was it. So, you know, lots and lots of learning during that journey. And I obviously I've simplified a lot of it. But that's how it happened.
Excellent, yeah. And you talk about the, you know, the kind of these different steps sort of within the business, you know, and sort of within starting a business, which are quite scary steps. A lot of people on their sort of entrepreneurial journey will take those. So, you know, for example, deciding that you're going to work for yourself, that's you know, a big step, and turning that opportunity down to focus on the website, you know, is one. And then the choice to grow the business as well. A lot of people stay very small, and you know, they stay as a freelancer, or they stay sort of home based, and they don't make that extra push to get the office and staff and everything like that, because it's just that extra gamble in their mind, isn't it? You know, it's almost having an act of faith in your business acumen to be able to take it to the next level. And it's scary. I mean, what would you say, what's your advice for people who are in a similar situation, they're starting a business or thinking about starting a business, or perhaps they're further down the line and they want to grow their business, but they're scared. What advice would you have for them?
I think the first thing I've always found during my career path was always go with your gut. So when it feels right, I mean, obviously, you know, do all the research and you know, stress test it and all that, sort of, whatever the step might be. If your gut says this is the right thing to do, I would always recommend doing it, because what happens is if you don't do it, you spend all your time going, oh, what if I'd done that? Because it nibbles away at you. And if you did it and it didn't work, fine, you know, you went for it and all that. Within that, there's that risk balance of, you know, any new step is always going to be risky. So you need to reduce that risk as much as possible by, as I say, researching it or whatever it might be. One of the things we always found, and I found this now as and we'll come on to this later, what I'm now doing as a business sounding board, business coach, is actually every time we took a big step, we had some external input into that. And I actually didn't realize this until sort of after the fact, looking back. So I've already mentioned that step between freelance to office and staff. We got somebody in to look at that for us. The next big step we took was when we really expanded the team and sort of stepped on the accelerator. And again, that came from an external advisor who came in. The next big step that came from us was actually when we actually put the business on the market about 6 years before we finally sold and then pulled out in the end. But we always had a plan B to get somebody else in to manage it. So a number two. Obviously, there's a big step in doing that initially is getting a number two in, because up to that point, you know, I'm the boss. I call the shots. I got a number two in and he started calling the shots, but he then gave us a new impetus. He was bringing new ideas in. And then sort of the last consultant we had in was a couple of years before we sold. And he took us to the next level. He made us a lot more professional. He put things in. He came from what I would call proper big business. And he brought big business thinking into what, you know, was always a classic SME. So all those times you have those big, difficult steps, getting somebody else in to help, to look at it, to advise, the old cliche, wood for the trees, all that sort of stuff. That's where I would advise anybody. And those steps can be, you know, from going from, you know, working for yourself to getting a freelancer in with you. You know, that's the first step. The step, you know, the scariest step, I think, is your first member of staff, because at that point, you know, when you're working for yourself, if you had a, you know, if you have a bad month or a bad quarter, you just don't take any money out. Once you've got a member of staff on, you're responsible for their mortgage, their rent, their kids having food on the table. You know, it's a really, really big step. So, you know, externally, I don't think you can underestimate external advice in any situation, wherever that comes from.
Definitely, yeah. When people have done it before, kind of been there, seen it before, and they've got the experience. And as I think you say, you know, you kind of got the t-shirt, so you can almost sort of represent the challenge itself because you understand it. And yeah, that's a big one. I think when people start off as a freelancer, as an individual, it is difficult to bring people on board just because, you know, of course, there's the financial commitment to them and, you know, the safety net of making sure that they've got a stable job. But it's also managing them as well, isn't it? Because a lot of people know that they need someone to come on board to help them with X, Y, Z. But a lot of the time, you know, you have to organize them. And sometimes it's a case of showing them how to do the job. And a lot of people kind of get caught up in the whole problem of, well, if I have to keep showing them how to do it, then, you know, I might as well do it myself, which is the kind of almost, I would say, kind of the small business minded individual, you know. And it does take quite, it takes a different way of thinking to delegate things. And like you say, bringing someone else in to run the business is really difficult for a lot of people, isn't it? It's very challenging. But that's big business thinking, isn't it? And that's the difference, I think.
I think it is. And, you know, your skill set has to change. If you know, let's take something sort of fairly simple and straightforward. Let's say you're a web developer and you know how to build websites, you might work on, it might be full stack, you might be WordPress, whatever it might be. You can only do a certain amount of time. If you're going to grow that business, you need somebody else on board. That then needs a completely different skill set. You know, it's management, it's motivation, it's targeting, it's direction, it's all those sorts of things. So it's a new skill set. And you find that as you develop through your business career, you know, it's all right working for yourself, I know what I'm doing, fine. And as you say, that initial step of actually this project or whatever it is you're working is going to take longer because I'm going to need to explain how it works and the standards I work to and deadlines and costs and whatever it might be. But you then develop that skill set to manage somebody and target them and motivate them, whatever it might be. And actually, one of the things we found looking back is every time our turnover and profit went up was actually after we'd got new members of staff on, because your capacity goes up. So if you're going to grow your business, you have to, as the business owner, you have to add to your skill set. And one of those skill sets is management and team building and motivation and appraisals and all those big grown-up things that sometimes you leave big business or corporate life or whatever you want to call it to work on your own. You go, this is great, I've got all the freedom and flexibility. But actually, if you really want to grow, you then start pulling in those experiences you've had from working in a corporate environment. You go, well, you know, what was good, what was bad, who was a good manager I worked for, what were the structures that company used, those sorts of things. And you know, a lot of people are quite happy being a freelancer and only being themselves and doing their own work. And that's absolutely fine. But if you're set on growing a business, you have to start adding a skill set to you as a business owner rather than just an executor of whatever it is you do. You know, you might make chairs. You might be the best chair maker. But if you want to grow your business more than being able to make one chair a week, you have to bring an apprentice on. And then you're probably going to have to take charge of sales, or you might bring a salesperson on or a marketeer or whatever it might be. But you've got to manage those people. So you're no longer a chair maker. You're a manager of a company that makes chairs. It's a different role.
And it's, you know, it's that challenge from going from a freelancer to growing the business ultimately. Excellent. And when you, let's kind of jump ahead. I mean, when you had the business and you were looking at sort of a business exit strategy, I mean, this is a kind of an area that really interests me because I'm a business owner, have multiple businesses. I've never sold a business. And yet I you know, talked to many, many, many clients who have been in the process of doing that, and many have successfully sold their businesses. And there's so much that goes into that, even from valuating your business and how you do that. I mean, I think there's like 10 different ways to value a business, isn't there? And I mean, if you can, so, you know, talk us through how you looked at valuing your business and how you think that a good way for people who are at that position that are looking to sell their business, what's a good way to value their business, and what are good ways to exit the business in terms of maybe a sale, or, you know, is there different ways? What would you sort of advise people at that stage?
Okay, I think one of the things that came out with our sale, and I've subsequently worked with people who have sold and who've bought and sold, is actually there's a lot of preparation that needs to go into place before you even get to the point of sort of pressing the button to try and sell a business. And the first thing is something somebody told me quite recently, is to do what he called a 2-week holiday test on the business, which is, if you, Pierre, go on holiday for 2 weeks, what happens to your business while you're away? Does it carry on running? Does it, you know, or does it all fall apart? And everybody goes, shit, we can't do anything because Pierre's on holiday. We'll have to wait till he comes back. Or you're directing stuff from by the pool or off the yacht or wherever you go on holiday. So the first thing you have to do if you're preparing to sell the business is actually make yourself redundant. Because if you take it at its really basic level, you're saying, here's the keys to the office. Here's all, here's everything. Goodbye, I'm going. So you have to have the business running without you before you can start selling it. And a lot of people sometimes miss that. You know, if you're a freelancer, you can't sell your freelance business because you are the business. If you are, important on a day-to-day basis to the functioning of the business, you cannot sell the business because you take you out of it, the business doesn't function. So that's the first thing. And you can start doing that, although we didn't, but you can start doing that from day one. You go, right, okay, I've got this brilliant business. I've got this brilliant business idea. I need to, from day one, start getting me out of the business. And that might be systems. It might be recording stuff. It might be processes. It might be roles. And obviously the key way to get you out of the business is to employ people to do what you're doing. So the first thing is to do that. The second thing, I think, and we found this when we sold, and it's often the case when you're running your own business and you have nobody to report to, is actually what you record as data isn't, you record it for yourself, for functionality of the business, how many sales did we do? What was the turnover? What's the profit margin? All that sort of stuff. But when somebody comes and starts tire kicking your business, they're going to need to see lots and lots and lots of data going backwards, maybe 2-3 years, going to see trends, all that sort of stuff, percentages of, how many accounts, how many different clients have you got? Which client is the biggest? What percentage of your turnover is that client for? So the easiest way to do it is to actually think, okay, if I was going to buy another business like mine, what information would I want to see if I was going to buy it? So the first thing is getting yourself out of the business. The second is having the data in the right way that proves it's sellable. And then and this is probably nearer when you get to sale, but things like, have all your clients got signed contracts? Have you got a file with all your supplier contract details in? Have you got even your staff contracts? Have your staff got contracts? Those sorts of things. And, things like, Dave down the road is our biggest client. We've had him for 10 years. He always pays, 10 grand a month. Well, if I'm buying your business, unless that's written on a piece of paper and an agreed contract, it has no value because Dave might just wander off when you leave. So all those sort of things have to be in place. In terms of valuing your business, people always, I've spoken to a number of business brokers and sales agents, and they always say, The start point for most business owners is the price they want is £1 million times the number of shareholders. So if you've got two people running the business, we want £2 million. Now, whether or not that business is worth £2 million is irrelevant to these people going, I want to walk away with £1 million, and he wants to walk away with £1 million, so we want £2 million. What you need to do is look at the market and see what people have paid for similar sized businesses. Or if not similar sized businesses, how have they valued them? So some businesses will value just on multiples of turnover. Some will value on EBITDA or net profit or recurring revenue. Very, very few people will value a business based on projections. So the classic is, you know, we've only made £100,000 this year, but if you put this, and this in place, it'll make £500,000. So the obvious question for the buyer is, well, why haven't you done it? So, you know, yes, as a buyer, you want to buy potential, but you're not going to pay for that potential because you're the one who's going to create it. So the way to evaluate your business is to look at what the market is doing or what the market has done, what the market prices are, and then apply them to your business. So if, for argument's sake, your sector are paying 3x annual profit, and if you're making £100,000 profit, your business is worth £300,000. If you want £1 million, you're going to need to get your turnover or your profit to £300,000 or £333,000. Then it's worth £1 million. And then you take it to another level, which is you get higher multiples on higher or higher profitable businesses because it's safer. You know, if you've got two clients and you're making £100,000, then one of those goes and half your profit's gone. If you're making £500,000 and you've got 50 clients, it's a lot safer bet, and their people are more likely to pay a higher multiple because it's a safer bet.
Definitely, yeah. So really, it's about getting safety within the business. So things like contracts, making sure that everything's there. It almost needs to be a working machine, doesn't it? And like you say, when you've got more clients, there's more of a kind of a safety net rather than if you've just got a few, you could lose a few of those. And I mean, it happens a lot of the time. You get businesses that sell to people, and then they go off and they kind of make exactly the same business, and then they just take the clients over to them. And so I think, you know, if you're buying a business, it's important to get a non-compete and things like that, because that's the very common thing to do, isn't it? Yeah, I definitely find that brilliant. And so, I mean, in business itself, do you see any sort of common mistakes? Obviously, being a business coach and a mentor as well, what are some of the common problems that you find people come to you with?
I think the issues fall into different pots. So and you could probably split it 50-50. Half of it is, I've got a problem, I don't know how to fix it. And the other half, and that's obviously very, very general. And the other half is, I've got an opportunity, I don't know how to maximize it, which would usually be somebody saying, you know, we're at full capacity. How do I extend the business? How do I bring more clients on? It might be a change of direction. It might be a pivot. It might just be an opportunity that's happened in the market. In terms of the mistakes people are making, I think the majority from an SME business owner's point of view is they're too busy working in the business to work on the business. Mm. So, you know, they're worried about, you know, next month's sales or this quarter's sales, when they're not taking a step back and going, okay, what does a year look like? What does a year ahead look like? What needs to be put in place for us to deliver that? That solution might then be, well, we need some more staff, or we need a different product range, or we need to put the prices up, or we need a new sector. Or it might be, we need to stop selling that because we're not making any money on that product. We need to be doing more of this. And I think you often find that I'm working with a web development agency at the moment, and they, as web agencies tend to do, they start with web design, then they do a bit of SEO because the client said, we need some SEO. Then they say, well, we need to do some PPC for you. And then they go, well, can you do all our social stuff as well? And they end up doing, you know, they've got, you know, in very simple terms, 4 or 5 products that they're selling because that's what clients are asking for. But the business owner hasn't sat down and gone, well, hang on a minute, where are we making the profit? Is the profit on the build of the website? Is it on the maintenance of the website? Are we making any money on the PPC? Are we making any money on the SEO? You know, we've got to take on another person to manage everybody's social media. Well, is it really worth it? Yeah. So the business owner isn't doing what the business owner should do, which is taking that step back and giving the helicopter view and the big plan and not being worried about what happens next month, but actually, what do I as the business owner have to put in place to make sure we can deliver on what I think where we should be next year?
Definitely, yeah. I mean, I actually find that a lot, being a sort of sales and marketing expert, a lot of people, you know, they have this this vision of driving sales, you know, increasing clients. But really, when it comes down to it, the key problem is not that. It's actually, you know, their product and their service. They're so kind of immersed in the deliverance of that product and service that really they don't have the mental capacity to do more. And so, you know, you can sell and sell and sell. And that's really should always be the focus, because at the end of the day, business is about money. So driving business, and of course, quality is important, and making sure that people get the best product and service. But, you know, I think that is one of the big issues that I find, is that a lot of people, they're so focused in running their business, like you say, that they can't focus on sales and driving the business forward and growing, because they're so immersed in that process. And it's how do you step out of that business, or how do you step out of that sort of product or service delivery to be able to focus on other parts of the business? And I mean, what would you say are good tips to kind of allow people to do that? Do you think it's hire and sort of replace yourself, or I mean, what sort of tools or techniques would you use to help you do that?
I think a lot depends on where you are on the business journey. So, you know, as a startup, you do everything. You know, you're the only person. If you don't do it, it doesn't get done. And obviously, one of the key things to do is, like you say, the sales and the marketing. That's a key. As you grow, you sort of slice off bits of you for other people to do. So you bring somebody in to do the sales and marketing. You bring somebody in to do the bookkeeping or the CRM or whatever it might be. And the more you can get stuff delegated, the more you can be the one who's doing that managing of the whole business. Bringing somebody in as an outside consultant or a coach or a sounding board like myself really, really helps, because that sort of person can look at your business from the outside and go, why are you doing that? Why haven't you done that? And who does that? And who's responsible for that? But one of the key things I found was when you get to a certain point, as you grow, you add people on who could add skills that you haven't got. So, you know, it might be another salesperson, or it might be a marketeer, or it might be a PPC person or SEO, whatever it might be. You get to a certain point when actually to expand further, you need to duplicate yourself. You need another one of you. But one of the key things I think is very, very important is you as the business owner, when you bring in a number two, you know, these are your roles and responsibilities. This is what you're responsible for. The key to make that working is actually what you determine your role is as a business owner at that point. So there's certain bits you need to let go of and say, well, I don't do the sales and marketing anymore. I don't do the accounts anymore. I don't do any client servicing anymore. What I do is I drive the team. I'm, you know, responsible for strategy. I'm responsible for staff, and I'm responsible for putting the tools in place for us to deliver. Now, that might be funding, it might be office space, it might be additional staff, but your role changes. So as you expand and you bring somebody in, you have to be very clear what your role is, where you can add most value, but also that you're not doing, you know, what's the phrase, having a dog and wagging,
barking for yourself.
Wag your tail yourself or what, yeah, it's that sort of thing. So the key is not just what's this guy I'm bringing in going to do, it's actually what am I responsible for now? And part of that is that helicopter view, that strategic view, that long-term stuff of being able to see what's happening and what's not happening.
Definitely, yeah. And I think sometimes as a business owner, you know, you think you're in control, but you're so in the picture that you can't stand back and see the picture. And it's only when you stand back and you see the full picture, you can see the errors or what needs to be changed or how you can make it sort of a masterpiece. So it's great. And that's why, you know, people come to people like yourselves, you know, to help them, support them with that. And getting to a kind of a different area of support and something that's really kind of poignant at the moment. I mean, I think we're kind of on, hopefully, the outward sort of march away from all this. Fingers crossed. But COVID, the pandemic, what sort of changes have you seen? Have you found that you're supporting people in different areas of the business, things like sort of helping to manage remote teams and stuff? I mean, what changes have you seen sort of personally and sort of within the businesses that you're working with?
Obviously, COVID has thrown a load of problems at people that just weren't prepared for it. And there's, yeah, and that's not pointing the finger. That's, you know, who would have said back in, you know, March last year, we're in what, April 2021 now, we're still suffering from the effects of that. It's, you know, it's obviously something very, very difficult. What I found is a lot of people have actually had, and obviously it depends on the sector particularly, a lot of people have had very, very good years because, yeah, after the first couple of weeks of, oh shit, you know, the whole world's collapsed, I've actually said, right, okay, dust myself down, what should I do instead? Or what, or how can I pivot my offering to reflect what the situation is now? So I've dealt with a company who were involved in the event space. They've now subsequently told me they've had their best year ever because they went digital, and obviously everybody had to go digital, and they've taken advantage of it. We've our local, we've got a very big local taxi firm here who do lots of airports and all that sort of stuff. They've pivoted to now deliver. They now are using all their vehicles, and they've now got vans and stuff. They're delivering food. They've now got an upmarket food delivery business where previously they were an airport taxi firm. So a lot has depended on what people are doing. And I think it's, whereas other people have just had to, either had to or haven't had the nous to, have had to hold their hands up and go, I can't do anything. You know, I can't. And, you know, we've all seen stories about, you know, hairdressers who've been doing, you know, how to cut your own hair on YouTube and all that sort of stuff. And it is down to the person. It's down to the person, and it's down to their ability to particularly step back and dust themselves down and look at the opportunity. The people I've dealt with, it so happens most of them have been in sectors where they've pretty much had to been able to carry on what they're doing. I've had a couple of people who haven't, and have some of them have sort of frozen, sort of rabbit in the headlights. Others have gone, right, okay, how do I do it now? What do I do instead?
It's definitely difficult, isn't it? I think there's a few sectors where it's impossible. You know, things like, well, like restaurants and things like that. But in the most part, a lot of other businesses, you know, they've pivoted, like you say, and, you know, opportunities have come out of it, really. And they're thriving. I think it's about mindset. And I think, you know, you do have to sometimes take a negative and make a positive out of it. And I think I was actually thinking the other day as I was walking down the street to go to a shop with the sunshine, the sun shining and everything. And I felt really good because I thought, never before have I actually realized, you know, my freedom, you know, being able to go to a shop was just an amazing thing, you know, kind of not a food shop, but just a normal shop that's reopened. And it's given me something that I think a lot of people take for granted. You know, you sort of take your life for granted in many respects, and doing things like going to the pub, doing things like going to a shop, doing things like spending time with family. It's potentially given everybody the opportunity to see life for what it really is. You know, I think it's so easy to be stuck into your business, and, you know, what's the saying, you know, you don't live to work, you work to live. And I think it's given a new way of looking at life. I mean, certainly for me, and so I think that's a positive thing. And something that's interesting, actually, I note, or I saw online, perhaps I could be wrong with this, but I think you studied politics, did you, in the University of Leicester? Is that right?
I did, yeah.
And I just would love to ask, I mean, what do you think? I mean, I know it's a sore subject sometimes for people, but how do you think that the government's dealt with COVID? What would you do differently if you're in charge of the country? And or do you think they've done a good job? I mean, what's your view set on that? And if this is a sustained problem, you know, if this goes another year, how do you possibly think the government can sustain, you know, the United Kingdom? And what's the way forward?
That's a very big question to ask me. Just to take a step back there, I did politics at university because I didn't know what I wanted to do as a career, and I was interested in politics. I've never been on a political march. I'm not particularly active. Okay, what do I think? I think the government fucked up big time throughout the whole of COVID. I think all of this sort of wasted money given to all their chums, you know, running PPE companies who've never done PPE before and all that sort of stuff. I think that's been absolutely disgusting. Mm. The only thing that's been successful has been the vaccination rollout. And surprise, surprise, that was done by the NHS rather than the government. You look at the money they've wasted on things like track and trace and all that sort of stuff. It's just horrendous. Is that sitting on the fence enough?
it's difficult. Yeah, no, I wondered if perhaps you're really passionate about politics and everything. Given the degree, but I guess the country is very much like a company, isn't it? But just a huge company with so many different sectors, so many, you know, it's a weird way of looking at it, but it's probably the biggest company, well, one of the biggest companies in the world if you see it in that respect, and it is. COVID has been, you know, terrible situation. Like you say, there's been lots of mistakes and stuff, but I guess it is very, very challenging, isn't it? I mean, the only thing I would probably suggest looking back, and it's probably a little bit controversial, but I would probably say it would have been better to, you know, to have a lockdown really only for the vulnerable, because, you know, at the same time, the vulnerable have been locked up with all of us. And so if they had been sort of sheltered, and the rest of life had kind of been allowed to go on, maybe things would be slightly different. Of course, there would be, you know, some, you know, challenges in terms of some people getting it who perhaps didn't think they were vulnerable. But I mean, I think we would be in a better position than we would now. But I think that, yeah, like say, the vaccine rollout has been really successful. So that's really good. Something I'd like to ask as well, which I think is really resonant to a lot of entrepreneurs, like yourself out there, and certainly myself, daily routine when you're working with business owners, is it just the business, or do you kind of advise on things like daily routine, how to think in the right mindset? I mean, what's your daily routine, for example, and how do you think that affects your day? Are you a believer in daily routines or not so much?
I don't like to preach daily routines, because you get these people who, I don't know, claim to be mindset gurus and all that sort of stuff. And it is not a case of one size fits all. You know, I think if you can find a routine that works for you, then yeah, knock yourself out. I do like routine, and that's, you know, one of the things that COVID has done is knock that routine out. You know, particularly at the sort of the depths of winter, you know, a Monday was no different to a Friday, it was different to a Sunday or a Saturday, or, you know, a bit Groundhog Day-ish. Mm. And I really didn't enjoy that. But I think there are certain things I think you can help people with. And I talk a lot about work prioritization, because it's something that worked for me, and I think a lot of people do this, is, you know, I've got this big pile of, I've got a long list of jobs to do, which one do I do first? Inevitably you end up either doing the easy ones, the quick ones, or the things you like doing, when actually the ones that add most value to the business and move the dial most are probably the ones that you're sort of pushing around the plate like a cold piece of broccoli and going, I'll do that tomorrow, it's got to 4:30 now, it's too late to start that now, I'll do it tomorrow. So I've sort of created a system which is based on the back of Stephen Covey's urgent versus important, and I sort of bastardized it slightly. But what tends to happen is you then end up with a list that generally the important stuff is at the top of the list, and as long as you're doing a task that is sort of first, second, third, or fourth on your list, you're doing stuff that you should be doing, and the stuff that's at the bottom, you just know I shouldn't be doing that, or I should be delegating it. And that's obviously either it shouldn't be done, or it should be delegated, or you should do it. I know lots and lots of people have lots and lots of different systems to prioritize work. So I don't think you can impose. I don't even think you can impose a mindset or something on people, or a daily routine on people. But you could help them you can help them in their own way to do the right things that they should be doing. And we've talked about, growing a startup and becoming a bigger business. One of the things that tends to happen is you end up still doing stuff that you shouldn't, a person in your position, whatever that position might be, shouldn't be doing. Mm. So in my scenario, 5 years out from selling the business, I was still the one writing invoices. Now, I shouldn't be doing that, and we brought a bookkeeper in, and that actually made our invoicing and our debt collecting better, and it allowed me extra time to do stuff that I should be doing. And inevitably that happens as you grow the business. Being able to identify those sort of things, they're sort of quite easy wins, rather than saying to somebody, right, all these people say, I do yoga at 6 o'clock and I have a cold shower at 7 and I have 3 blueberries for breakfast, and then, I do a 10-hour day, then I meditate. And you go, well, that's just a load of bollocks. Mm. A, nobody does that. B, if you don't want to do that, it's not, somebody forcing you to do that, it's not going to make you a brilliant business leader.
Yeah, it's more processes and maybe tools, like you say, that you can use within your day, to get the maximum. Brilliant. And we've got a little bit more time in the session. So I would probably finish with a question around sort of books and influences in your life. So is there any, you mentioned one sort of technique, which I don't know, perhaps it's from a book, but is there any good books that you've read with regards to kind of business strategy? And who would you say are your influences and, people that you look up to, and they can be business and non-business, who you think have made an impact on your life?
I think there's a few things. I'm a great sort of reader and reader of books and listeners to podcasts and reader of magazines and stuff like that. So from a book point of view, my go-to business book is Stephen Covey's 7 Habits of Successful Business People. I must have read it 5 or 6 times. I pick something up new every single time. So that'd be my number one recommendation. My second one would be Good to Great by Jim Collins. And one of the key things we took out of that, and this was actually brought in by one of our consultants that came in, was the concept of the BHAG, the big, hairy, audacious goal. Yeah, if you aim for something just ridiculously big, it keeps you focused on what you're doing, and actually you might even get there. Hmm. So I would say they were the two, from a business book point of view, they were the things that helped. I also like a book by a guy called Jay Baer, B-A-E-U-R-A-E-R, called Utility. So that's Y-O-U-tility. It's about sort of being helpful and supportive and all that sort of stuff. In terms of other learning, one of the things I came across probably about 10 years ago now was a podcast called Manager Tools, which is American. So you have to sort of see through the Americana bit. Hey, welcome to Manager Tools, We're in Nevada today and all that sort of stuff. But it talks about things like how you manage your staff. So things like one-to-ones. It's about delegation. It's about motivation. It's to do with how you support and give praise to staff, all that sort of thing. There's hundreds of podcasts now. They've been doing it for years and years and years. But really, really helpful. And, you know, it goes into things like interviews and recruitment, all sorts of just fun. If you are a manager, Manager Tools is brilliant. And they're probably the main things that I sort of followed. I also, one of my big inspirations was an ad agency I worked for. I worked for about 7 years, had a fantastic company culture. And I tried to take that into my business and copied lots of stuff from there. And, you know, I didn't start my own business till I was 32, 33, something like that. So I tried to take things from all through my career up to that point and go, right, well, I like that. I liked working for that manager and how he did that and all that sort of stuff. And then the other thing really is I like reading business autobiographies. Mm. Some of them are quite often glossed over. Mm. But they're interesting to hear, you know, Alan Sugar, Richard Branson, all those sort of Duncan Bannatyne, all those sort of people. I've read lots of their books. Probably not any business learnings from them, but interesting to read their stuff. Oh, the other book I really did like was by a guy called Felix Dennis, which was called something like How to Be a Millionaire. Mm. Now, that had some really, really good stuff in it. So if your listeners want to read that, that's a really, really good book.
Definitely. No, that's brilliant. Well, excellent. Well, thank you so much. And I saw as well, you're an advisor with the Prince's Trust. So you help people, or a mentor, and you help lots of young people and people that are looking to start businesses. But in sort of the broader sense, if people are in business and they're wanting support, and I think that's the big takeaway from this podcast, is that, you know, there's lots of challenges that people come across within business, but there is people to reach out like yourself that can help you with those challenges, that have been there before, actually gone through some of those challenges and found ways and tools and techniques to overcome those challenges and sort of grow. So how can people reach out to you? What platforms are you on? What's your website?
Okay, so my website is philfraser.co.uk. Don't go to philfraser.com, because philfraser.com is a medieval costume reenactment company. So if you see, you know, things that look like it should be out of Game of Thrones and, you know, all that sort of stuff, that's not me. It's philfraser.co.uk. I'm usually on LinkedIn. I'm on LinkedIn most days, so you'll probably find me on there. I'm on Twitter at Phil_Fraser. And I've got a YouTube channel as well, there is somebody called Phil Fraser who's, I think he's Thai, and he's doing a video blog of his life. That, again, that's not me. You might dig around to find me. But I'd say website's probably the easiest, or LinkedIn.
Excellent. Well, Phil, thank you so much for your time today. And I think our listeners will take a lot from this, lots of advice. And thank you very much.
Thanks for having me on, Jeff.